In a world where connections define our existence, imagine the torment of being forgotten by everyone you meet. This is the haunting reality for Addie LaRue, a young woman who made a desperate bargain with a dark entity to escape an arranged marriage in 18th century France. Her story captivates readers across generations, exploring the profound human desire to leave a mark on the world. V.E. Schwab's masterpiece has garnered praise from celebrities like Taylor Swift, who called it a beautiful meditation on what it means to be remembered, and has spent over 37 weeks on the New York Times bestseller list. This tale of immortality, art, and defiance resonates deeply in our social media age, where visibility often equals existence, asking us, what would you sacrifice to be truly seen? On July 29, 1714, in the small French village of Villon-sur-Sarthe, Adeline LaRue makes a desperate choice that will echo through centuries. At 23, she flees her wedding to a widower named Roger, escaping through a window and racing toward the woods as darkness falls. In her culture, a woman's life follows a predetermined path, from daughter to wife to mother to grave, with little room for dreams or self-determination. Adeline, inspired by the village's old woman Estelle, who worshipped the ancient gods, has always yearned for more. As twilight deepens in the forest, Adeline kneels and prays fervently to any god who might listen. "I will do anything," she whispers, pressing her wooden ring, a childhood gift from her father, into the earth. When laughter answers from the shadows, she realizes she's summoned one of the forbidden gods that answer after dark. The darkness materializes into a handsome stranger with emerald eyes and black curls, eerily identical to the man she's been drawing in her sketchbooks for years. He dismisses her wooden ring as worthless and reveals he deals only in souls. Desperate for escape, Adeline offers a fateful bargain. "You can have my soul when I don't want it anymore." The god accepts with a kiss that tastes of dusk turning to night, sealing their deal with a single word: done. When Adeline returns home, her worst nightmare becomes reality. Her own father doesn't recognize her, seeing only a stranger or spirit. He casts her out, bolting the door behind her. Even Estelle, who briefly senses something familiar about this strange girl, cannot hold on to the recognition. Adeline discovers the cruel truth of her bargain. She has gained immortality and freedom, but at the cost of being forgotten by everyone she meets. The darkness has given her exactly what she asked for, but twisted it into a prison of isolation. This pivotal moment establishes the central conflict that will span three centuries: Adeline's struggle to leave a mark on the world, despite a curse that erases her from memory the moment she leaves someone's sight. Addie, as she renames herself, shedding Adeline along with her past, quickly learns the brutal parameters of her curse. She cannot die, age, or starve, but neither can she leave any lasting impression on the world. Doors lock behind her, possessions vanish from her grasp, and most painfully, every connection she forms dissolves the moment she's out of sight. She becomes a ghost among the living, perpetually starting over. The early years are the hardest. In Paris, she collapses during a devastating winter freeze and awakens in a cart of corpses, having been mistaken for dead. When she claws her way out, terrifying a woman who witnesses what appears to be a resurrection, the cart drivers have no memory of placing her there. She discovers her wooden bird carving, her last connection to home, is gone, carried away with the dead. Though she grieves this final severance from her past life, she also feels a guilty relief that the last thread tethering her has been cut. Through necessity, Addie becomes resourceful and cunning. She learns to steal what she needs, food, clothing, shelter, and develops tricks to navigate her unique constraints. She discovers she can indirectly affect the world. While she cannot hand someone a drugged drink, she can drug a bottle and let them pour their own poison. She cannot create art, but can inspire it in others. She cannot build or break things permanently, but she can move through the world like a ghost, taking what she needs to survive. Every year on July 29th, the anniversary of their deal, the darkness, whom she eventually names Luke, visits her. These encounters become the only constant in her life. the only being who remembers her from one meeting to the next. Their relationship evolves from adversarial to complex, with Luke repeatedly offering to end her suffering if she'll surrender her soul. Despite moments of wavering, Addie stubbornly refuses, clinging to her freedom and the small joys she finds in art, music, and the changing world around her. "I would rather be a ghost with you than dust without," she tells him during one of their encounters, capturing the painful paradox of her existence, the curse that grants her endless time but denies her the ability to truly live within it. After decades of isolation, Addie discovers a profound truth that changes everything. While memories of her fade, ideas she plants can take root and grow. In 1806 Venice, she poses for an Italian artist named Matteo, who sketches her nude form. Though the drawing remains abstract, her seven freckles are precisely marked like stars across her cheeks. When Matteo inevitably forgets her, the drawing remains, a breakthrough that reveals the first crack in her curse. This revelation transforms Addie's approach to her immortality. If she cannot be remembered directly, she can still influence the world through inspiration. She becomes a muse to countless artists across centuries, writers, painters, musicians, whispering ideas that take form in their work. Though they forget her, fragments of Addie persist in their creations. Seven stars in a painting, a woman with russet hair in a poem, a haunting melody that captures her essence. In 1751 Paris, she carefully orchestrates an encounter with the influential salonniere Madame Joffrin, presenting herself as a noblewoman named Marie-Christine Latremoille. Though Luke sabotages this particular scheme, Addie learns another valuable lesson. While people forget her, ideas about her can spread. This knowledge becomes another tool in her arsenal against oblivion. Throughout the centuries, Addie's presence ripples through art history. A wooden bird figurine she once carried inspires a sculpture called Revenir by artist Arlo Miret. A night with Matteo results in sketches that influence his later masterpiece, The Muse. Her seven freckles appear as stars in paintings across different eras, creating a mysterious pattern that centuries later will catch the attention of an art student named Beatrice. "Art is about ideas," Addie explains, "and ideas are wilder than memories. They're like weeds, always finding their way up." This becomes her way of leaving footprints in the snow of history, not through direct action, but through the seeds of inspiration she plants in creative minds. It's a bittersweet victory, allowing her to influence the world without ever receiving credit or recognition for her contributions. Luke, the darkness who cursed Addie, evolves from antagonist to something far more complicated over the centuries. Their annual meetings on July 29th become a strange constant in her otherwise fluid existence, the only relationship that persists through time. Though she initially despises him for his cruelty, their interactions gradually shift from purely adversarial to intellectually stimulating and eventually intimate. In 1724 Paris, after 4 years without a visit, Luke reappears to mock her brief connection with a young man named Remy Laurent. His jealousy reveals something unexpected. The darkness has been watching her, perhaps even caring about her experiences in some twisted way. When he threatens to abandon her completely, leaving her to wander forgotten forever, Addie realizes how much she's come to depend on these yearly confrontations. Without them, she faces endless years of isolation with no reprieve. By 1872, their dynamic has shifted enough that Luke rescues her from a difficult situation on a German train, transporting her to Munich to experience Wagner's Tristan und Isolde. As they discuss the opera, Addie realizes some performers have made deals with him, trading their souls for brief artistic glory. "Time is cruel to artists," Luke explains. "Everyone wants to be remembered." Though she insists, "I am a muse and you are a thief," their shared appreciation for human creativity forms an unexpected bridge between them. The relationship takes its most dramatic turn in 1952 Los Angeles, when their long-simmering tension culminates in a passionate night together. What begins as purely physical transforms into something deeper over the years, from 1952 to 1968. Their encounters evolve from sporadic to frequent, with Luke appearing in her life with increasing regularity. The moment that truly breaks Addie's resolve comes when she wakes to find him still there, still remembering her, the first time she hasn't felt utterly alone after sleep. By 1970, Luke claims to love her and presents her with a key to a yellow house in New Orleans, a home of her own. Despite her wariness, Addie is moved by this tangible gift. Yet she's reminded of his true nature when she witnesses him collecting another soul's bargain. The elderly shopkeeper faces him without fear, saying simply, "I am tired," before his darkness envelops her. Their relationship ultimately combusts in 1984 when Addie realizes his softened manner was just another strategy to make her surrender her soul. Their fight, centuries in the making, ends with their New Orleans home in flames. Standing on Bourbon Street, watching the fire consume everything, Addie tears the wooden ring from her neck, throws it into the ashes, and walks away, beginning a 40-year separation. In March 2014, nearly 300 years into Addie's curse, the impossible happens. She enters a New York bookstore called The Last Word and steals a copy of The Odyssey. When she returns the next day, the employee, Henry Strauss, confronts her. "Next time you try to return a book, don't return it to the same person you stole it from the first time." These simple words shatter Addie's world. For the first time in three centuries, someone remembers her. Henry is unremarkable at first glance, a bookstore employee with dark curls and kind eyes who hunches as if trying to take up less space. Yet to Addie, he's nothing short of miraculous. When he speaks her name, "Goodnight, Addie," it's the most beautiful sound she's ever heard. After centuries of isolation, being truly seen by another person overwhelms her with joy and disbelief. Their relationship develops quickly, both of them sensing something profound in their connection. Henry shows Addie modern New York, speakeasy arcade bars, underground music clubs, art installations on the High Line. For the first time in centuries, Addie experiences the simple pleasure of planning future meetings, of being remembered from one day to the next, of leaving belongings in someone else's drawer. The mystery of why Henry alone can remember her deepens as their relationship grows. At an interactive art exhibit, they discover something remarkable. While Addie's marks fade immediately from plexiglass walls, when Henry guides her paint-covered fingers with his hand, her drawings remain. This revelation transforms her, and she urgently asks him to write her name in a notebook. When it doesn't disappear, she tells him, "This is how it starts," and he begins to document her centuries-long story. What Addie doesn't yet know is that Henry harbors his own dark secret. He too has made a bargain with the same entity, though with very different terms. The miracle of their meeting is no coincidence, but part of a larger game being played by the darkness that connects them both. While Addie traded her soul for freedom and immortality, Henry Strauss made a far more desperate bargain. Born with what he describes as a broken heart, feeling everything too intensely, Henry struggled with depression throughout his life. After his marriage proposal is rejected by his girlfriend Tabitha, he reaches his breaking point. Drunk and high on pills during a rainstorm, he encounters a strange man who remains perfectly dry despite the downpour. This stranger, Luke, in another guise, offers Henry a deal. In exchange for his soul, he will be loved by everyone he meets. Feeling he has nothing left to lose, Henry accepts, not realizing the terrible price. The deal works. Suddenly, everyone is drawn to him, seeing in him exactly what they want to see. His parents, who once criticized his every choice, now express pride and approval. Strangers approach him with unusual interest. Even his ex-fiancée returns, professing her love. But Henry quickly discovers the curse hidden within this blessing. No one truly sees him anymore. They see only a projection of their desires. His authentic self has been erased, replaced by a mirror reflecting others' wants. "I'm perfect because I'm not there at all," he realizes with horror. He has become whoever people want him to be, loved not for who he is, but for what others imagine him to be. The most devastating aspect of Henry's deal is its duration. Unlike Addie's open-ended bargain, Henry sold his soul for just 1 year of being remembered and desired. When he made this choice, in his darkest moment, even this brief reprieve seemed worth the price. The watch Luke gave him counts down his remaining time, a constant reminder of his approaching deadline. When Addie discovers the truth about Henry's deal, she finally understands his urgency, his constant note-taking, his refusal to waste time, his insistence on living fully. With his deadline approaching, Henry explains that in his darkest moment, he would have given his soul for less than a year. Their curses work together in perfect, tragic harmony. What Addie wants most is to be remembered, and that's exactly what Henry can do. What Henry craved was to be truly seen, and Addie alone can look at him without the supernatural fog affecting everyone else. As Henry's deadline approaches in September 2014, Addie refuses to accept his fate. She confronts Luke, offering herself in exchange for Henry's freedom. "I will be yours as long as you want me by your side." Luke accepts with a victorious smile, believing he's finally won their centuries-long game. The bargain is sealed with a kiss that tastes of copper, marking it done. On the night of Henry's deadline, in pouring rain on a rooftop, he discovers what Addie has done. "It is already done," she tells him as he pleads. "Think of it as a thank you for seeing me." As darkness claims him, she makes him promise to remember her. His last glimpse is of her 7 freckles like stars before she vanishes and he falls. Henry wakes the next morning, alive and with his memories intact. Though Addie is gone, her stories remain in the journals he's filled with her tales. He spends hours reading through every page, relieved that her history hasn't vanished with her. Over the following months, he transforms these journals into a manuscript titled The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, publishing it without an author's name and with the simple dedication, "I remember you." The sacrifice Addie makes for Henry represents everything she's learned about love and freedom during her long existence. After centuries of being forgotten, she chooses to be remembered by just one person rather than possessed by the darkness. Yet her final bargain contains a subtle trap for Luke. She carefully worded their agreement as long as you want me by your side, rather than forever. With centuries of studying his cruelty, she plans to make him eventually tire of her, to break his heart until he casts her off. A year after Henry completes his manuscript, Addie visits a London bookstore where her story is prominently displayed. When Luke appears, seemingly triumphant that he still possesses her despite her story being shared with the world, he doesn't realize she's begun a new game. Patient and cunning after 300 years of struggle, Addie follows him into the dark, knowing her freedom awaits at the end of this final chapter. At its heart, The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue explores how stories and art allow us to transcend our mortality. Throughout her centuries of existence, Addie discovers that while she cannot leave direct marks on the world, she can plant seeds of inspiration that bloom in others' creations. This becomes her form of immortality, not through being remembered herself, but through the ideas she scatters across time. "Ideas are wilder than memories," Addie explains to Henry. "They're like weeds, always finding their way up." This truth sustains her through centuries of isolation. Though she cannot sign her name to a painting or be photographed, traces of her persist in art across generations. The 7 freckles that appear as stars in portraits, the wooden bird that inspires a sculpture, the melodies she helps musicians discover. The novel itself becomes the ultimate manifestation of this theme. When Henry publishes Addie's story, he creates the one thing she could never make herself, a permanent record of her existence. Though readers won't know she's real, her experiences and perspective will touch countless lives. The book becomes both her testament and her revenge against the darkness that sought to erase her. This meta-narrative speaks to the power of stories to preserve what might otherwise be lost to time. Just as Addie's experiences live on through Henry's writing, all literature serves as a bridge between generations, allowing the dead to speak to the living. In a world where everything physical eventually crumbles, stories offer a kind of immortality available to anyone brave enough to share their truth. The novel ultimately suggests that being remembered isn't about monuments or fame, but about the impact we have on others, the ways we change them, inspire them, and live on through their actions and creations. Addie's curse forces her to discover this profound truth, that true immortality comes not from being personally remembered, but from how our essence continues to shape the world long after we're gone. Despite the supernatural elements of her story, Addie's struggle resonates because it magnifies universal human fears. Will I be forgotten? Does my life matter? How do I find meaning in a vast, indifferent universe? Her response to these existential questions offers a powerful philosophy for living. When Henry asks if she regrets her bargain, Addie explains that despite the hardships, the moments of beauty were always worth the pain. Rather than becoming bitter or surrendering to despair, she approaches each day with what can only be called defiant joy, a determination to experience everything life offers despite knowing none of it will last. She savors art, music, food, and human connection, even though these pleasures are always temporary for her. This philosophy emerges most clearly when Addie and Henry visit an art installation called The Artifact on the High Line. Moving through rooms alternating between glaring brightness and consuming darkness, they reach a chamber filled with 1,000 pinprick stars close enough to touch. Even after 3 centuries, Addie's face lights up with wonder as she whispers, 300 years, and you can still find something new?" Addie's approach to immortality offers wisdom for mortal lives as well. Rather than obsessing over legacy or permanence, she finds meaning in ephemeral moments. A sunset over Venice, the taste of chocolate, the feeling of connection with another person, even if just for a night. She demonstrates that a life's value isn't measured by its length or by how many people remember it, but by the depth and authenticity of its experiences. The novel suggests that true freedom comes not from escaping death or being eternally remembered, but from embracing the temporary nature of existence and finding beauty within its constraints. As Estelle told young Adeline centuries ago, "Heaven is merely a nice spot in the shade, a broad tree over my bones." In the end, Addie's greatest rebellion against both her curse and the darkness isn't her refusal to surrender her soul, it's her persistent choice to live fully despite knowing nothing she does will last.